Well, it's that time again on a Friday when AM Live presents another update from the coalface with Martin Creamer, publishing editor of Engineering News and Mining Weekly. A very good morning to you, Martin.
Morning, Klan.
Are you well?
No, great, thanks. Yourself?
I'm very well, thank you. Well, hopes of generating massive amounts of clean electricity from Central Africa are being rekindled, Martin. Interesting.
You know, the Democratic Republic of Congo has the Congo River, and at the Inga site, this is the most prolific hydroelectric power site in the world. There's nothing to touch it. I mean, we could easily get out of Inga as much power as we getting out of Eskom at the moment and from that grand Inga site. But it would be clean because this is hydropower. So you wouldn't have the carbon element. And of course, it's also got to be affordable. And that's going to be the trick. But because of COP17, where they'll be talking about climate change, you know, within the United Framework in Durban, starting on Monday, they have shaken the dust off this whole plan of Grand Inga again. And of course, our own Minister of Energy, Poor Peters, has gone up to Lubumbashi, and together with President Jacob Zuma and President Joseph Kabila of the DRC, and they've signed a new memorandum of understanding for Grand Inga. This Inga they've been talking about since the 60s, it's a magnificent possibility to create clean electricity for Africa and even Southern Europe. You know, they talk about it. There's just such a huge potential, you know, 39,000 megawatts and beyond. They're even talking 50,000 megawatts from this flowing river. In parts of it, this river flows so vigorously that you don't even need to build a dam wall. You can put the turbines in the water and you can get your power generated.
If they've been talking about this since the 60s, what has stopped them from proceeding with the plan?
The biggest thing is country risk. You know, the Democratic Republic of Congo is seen as high risk, and this is going to be high capital. And there's also a need for agreements around the country. You know, we had Westcor, South Africa did with Namibia and a lot of other Southern African countries to create the transmission network in the meantime, because it's going to need enormous transmission carrying all that power down through Africa to the south, to the north, whichever way you want to go. But we even abandoned that because there was a complaint about inclusivity, and they seem to have remolded the model now with this new memorandum of understanding, and it seems that there's a new focus on it ahead of COP70, but I just hope they can get moving from the paperwork to concrete.
Talking about COP17, South Africans need to recycle more as part of our response to combating climate change.
Yes, you know, at COP17 starting Monday, I mean, there are going to be heady discussions, intellectual discussions all about, you know, how to mitigate climate change and carbon footprints and carbon capture and storage and all that sort of intellectual stuff. But what about on the ground? You know, what can we do at a micro level? And people are saying, you know, that manufacturers need to come into play now to be encouraged or even forced to make products that can be repaired, that can be reused, that can be refilled. I mean, look at a mine these days. When you go, before you can dig in that ground, you've got to give the governments of the world guarantees, financial guarantees, which the governments hold that you will rehabilitate that you will fix it once you've but what are manufacturers around the world? They've got no obligations. They flood the market with products that end up on waste dumps. You know, and nobody does anything about it. And that is a huge rehabilitation cost. It's a cost to municipalities, these dumps are building. People are saying now, particularly with the, you know, COP17 environment, let us start formulating some micro activity that can lead to better climate change mitigation and go into remanufacturing, which is a process that you use, you disassemble, you clean, you repair, you reuse former used products in new products. And I think the only way we see it now is in the automotive industry. You know, for some time now, there has been a remanufacture of petrol engines and diesel engines for light commercial and passenger vehicles. But other than that, we have had no sort of obligation besides the automotive industry of getting away from this throwaway society that we have, which a fortune ends up on the dumps and someone else's responsibility. You know, we've got vast quantities of plastic. And I'm talking about not just the recycling end of it. You know, you must repair, reuse, refill, and reuse again before you start the recycling. That must be at the end of the line. And so this is something, as we head for COP17, that I think can be encouraged at government level and at micro level where the corporations involved, but it'll need some sort of stimulation or enforcement.
I'm sure. It's a very interesting concept, and I think that that's the concept that should be discussed quite thoroughly at COP17. On other matters then, the Russian company Renova is keen now to invest more here in South Africa.
Yes, this Renova, we don't know much about it, but it's quite a big Russian company. It's one of the top 10 private oil producers and one of the biggest aluminium producers in the world. And it's headed by Viktor Fexelberg. And it has been dipping its toe in investment in South Africa. It's begun with mining manganese in the Kalahari, where it's done very well with a black empowerment partner, Majestic Silver Trading, which has actually got control of the mine, and Renova's been, I think, wise in taking 49%, but it gets that flow of manganese for its trans-alloy smelter. It's also smelting the manganese. We've been doing it in the Mpumalanga area for many years, but the Russians have taken over this. It used to be owned by Anglo-American through Highveld Steel, then Roman Abramovitz, the Russian who owns Chelsea Football Club, he then bought Highveld Steel in Mpumalanga, and one of the peripheral items was trans-alloys, and then along came Viktor Fexelberg, another Russian, and he bought that trans-alloys, you know, which falls under the Renova umbrella. And now we see Renova wanting to do much more at trans-alloys, even building a sinter plant. It's also saying, well, to smelt in South Africa, you need energy, so they want to possibly start generating electricity as an independent power producer, but in a very clean way, solar power, because they want to do it in the Kalahari that they've got used to, possibly in the Kalahari. And they also the owners of a Swiss company that manufactures thin film solar panels. So they want to put all that together and try and get enough electricity for themselves at their smelter, but also feed it into the Eskom grid as an IPP. And then why they're looking to sintering is to try and mitigate their logistics costs, because they're finding that they might have to put 1 million metric tons of manganese onto tracks, onto the road, because they can't get it onto rail this year as they mine. And so to mitigate that, they want to add value through the sintering plant possibility at TransAlloys and in Mpumalanga. But at the same time, they are offering, through the South African-Russian Business Council, some sort of interface between our Transnet and the state-owned Russian railways there. Perhaps they can do something together to augment that the heavy haul line they want to build to Kucha, or any other line that assists with manganese transport, in which Renova, the Russian company, now wants to increase its involvement in South Africa.
All right, well, Martin Creamer, we thank you very much for coming through and talking to us this morning. Martin Creamer is publishing editor of Engineering News and Mining Weekly. He'll be back again at the Coalface at the same time next Friday. Thanks, Martin.
Thanks, Kalani.